I think they like you, Steve.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling. Sorry, Joe.
Goodbye, baby.
Michigan got thumped last night by Villanova. We'll go live to Mark Carmen, who is in Philadelphia. Where should he be, in Philadelphia? Should he still be in San Antonio? Where do you want to be?
I prefer San Antonio, Steve. Good town.
The weather's better.
Yeah.
And the Final Four is now final. In case you went to bed early, big win by Villanova. More on that in just a second. Later on the program, Kid of the Week, because, you know, it's Tuesday. And then, I frankly don't know how this is going to work out, but Tony Preckwinkle, Sarah Ross, and Carol Bogart will be here talking about criminal justice reform. And we'll, you know, we'll see. Reverend Jesse Jackson, on the eve of the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King, will be with us at 8:40. And Roger Ebert's widow, Chaz Ebert, will be in studio after 9. And Orion Samuelson, after 9:30, can talk a little bit about what's going to happen to Iowa pig farmers with this tax burden they're going to have to deal with, the tariff inflicted by China as a response to the Trump tariffs. That's all coming up on what we call the Steve Cochran Show. Joe thought I was having a stroke there. The Steve Cochran Show. And it's 6:13. Let's do the top six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, Villanova wins. Big. This is a dominant team, Mark Carmen. Dominant team.
The one of four teams that won every single NCAA tournament game by double digits, Steve. That is impressive.
And who is this guy?
Dante DiVincenzo. Parents John and Kathy DiVincenzo, born in Newark, Delaware. He's got a brother, John A. DiVincenzo.
He's a big boy, isn't he?
He's a athletic guard, Steve. Came off the bench, 6'5", 205. I don't know how much you watched last night, but some of the shots he hit were ridiculous.
I watched three-fourths of the game.
That's an aggressive...
Three-fourths.
Good job.
And with 10 minutes to go, I said, this is over.
It very much was.
They call him the Michael Jordan of Delaware.
Is that right?
Yeah. I call him my paisan. Well, not last night, but...
The Michael Jordan of Delaware was really your biggest nightmare, wasn't he?
Yeah, no answer for the for my paisan.
Consecutive Delaware State tournament basketball titles back in the day, Steve, and Joe Romano, whose Wolverines lost last night, which was good for humanity.
That's very, 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 very hurtful.
Immature.
For Super Joe. Super Joe, you know, is a big Michigan fan.
Yeah, but those people.
Head held high.
Those people.
It was a great run.
Come on.
It was a nice
those
run.
Those people.
Come on, ILL. Back me up, Andrea.
I have to say, Big Ten.
You've matured?
Yeah, somewhat. Somewhat.
Okay.
Quack. State senator scheduled to talk about whether Illinois ought to allow sports gambling, speaking of the Final Four, if the federal law banning is ever lifted. The proposal comes from Democratic Senator, State Senator Napoleon Harris. He played in the National Football League.
And the Illini?
Was he an Illini? Mm-hmm.
Northwestern, Harris.
Right, Northwestern. Nah, go Big Ten.
It would allow Illinois casinos to take wagers on amateur, professional, and college sports and manage an internet platform for taking bets. So we would have a state bookie.
Basically, yeah.
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 You wouldn't have to go to the guy down the street. You'd have a state bookie.
Yeah. And, you know, we need to talk to Orion about this, too, because he was on the Gaming Commission for many years. Gambling in Illinois has always just been such a volatile topic. You're either completely for it, completely against it, anti-horse racing, anti-video poker.
Yeah.
You know, it's just there's kind of no gray
nothing
area.
In the middle.
Yeah.
Next. State health officials have now linked two deaths and dozens of illnesses to synthetic marijuana known as K2. Authorities on Monday said they found a large amount of synthetic pot laced with a toxic substance often used in rat poison being sold at a West Side convenience store. All right, now here's what I don't understand. Why the rat poison? Is it a crucial ingredient in making the drug? Because if you're trying to kill your market,
yeah,
what would you want to kill your customers
for? I completely agree, and that's the question right now. They have three people arrested. Now they're reporting 54 other cases of this severe bleeding. And you're right. If you're selling to your people or your market, whatever it would be, why would you want them bleeding from the eyes and the ears?
I think we're talking about a potency and perhaps did not know the side effects. This is just me.
Well, they know they're putting rat poison in it.
Right.
I guess they would know that, yes.
Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah. If any drug dealers are listening and would like to explain this to us, take 10 minutes from your lab and call us so we'll understand better. Quack. The affluenza teen is out of jail. This is an incredibly annoying story from Texas. And just a nightmare. A Texan kid kills four people while driving drunk and then avoided prison by having his lawyer successfully blame his wealthy upbringing and the fact that he had never had to be accountable for anything, and a condition that's hopefully never going to be recognized by anyone other than nonsense of affluenza. Mm. Affluenza in court. I'm so affluent, I can't relate to not having having rules applied to me. The rules never applied to him, so why wouldn't he drive drunk? That was the premise. Now 20, he walked free from a jail in Fort Worth where he served time after he had originally fled to Mexico with the help of his mother. What he does after this is unknown.
Yeah, well, he's got 6 years of reporting to a probationary officer. Most of what happens.
So, in his 2 years in prison, I hope we're really miserable. Next, President Trump making a new push to crack down on those who enter the U.S. illegally and to make it more difficult to get refuge in the country. For the last couple of days, he has warned that caravans of immigrants are heading towards the U.S. from Central America. I got my eye out. I'm looking where we're sitting right now. I have to look over my shoulder because that's south.
Yes.
But that's where the caravans are coming from.
Is that a Dodge minivan? Is that a...
Usually.
Yeah, usually.
Okay. And one more. Brian Urlacher has chosen Bob Babich to present him at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Do you know anything about the connection there?
Yeah, he was their linebackers coach. And Urlacher, one of his comments about it was that he got the most out of me. Quote, he challenged me every day, whether it's meetings, walkthroughs, or practice. And this is a guy who was with him forever and pushed him to get to levels that perhaps he did not think he could get to. So that's why he's recognizing him, which is super cool.
And, you know, Hamp will talk forever about what Buddy Ryan meant to him.
Yep.
You know, it's the guys that kick your butt the most in life that later on in life you realize are really important to you.
Right.
So
thanks, Steve.
You're welcome. Yeah. At 6:19, that's it.
That's it.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more.
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Matt's a paramedic in Chicago. Matt, what is the deal with the rat poison and the synthetic weed?
You know what? I'm not sure specifically pertaining to the synthetic weed, but they've cut it in heroin. They've cut it in cocaine just as a cutter, as a filler to stretch the product to make it last longer. But why they put it in synthetic weed, you know, that really doesn't add up. I mean, maybe to stretch the product so they can get a little more bang for their buck.
Can you put flour, yeast,
basil,
soy?
Right, but
cumin.
Yeah, why rat poison is beyond me for the synthetic weed, but cocaine and heroin, it's been commonly used to stretch it, and it's also a stimulant. The rat poison, it's an arsenic. It's a stimulant. Can increase respirations, heart rate.
So their idea is to get the mix right, not kill their customers.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, ideally, yeah, to get the mix right and not kill their customers. But obviously, they're not the brightest people in the world.
Right, and we should say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I assume these kids that you're dealing with and trying to save, all economic levels, all colors, all strata, they're just all messed up.
For sure. For sure, yeah. I mean, from Yeah, from the businessmen downtown to the, you know, bums and unfortunate ones on the street. Everybody's hooked up.
People forget that there are men and women, mostly men demographically, but there are men and women now in their 70s who had huge cocaine problems. And
oh, sure.
You think of grandparents, you know, in their 70s having coke problems, but we've reached that cycle, that generational thing. It's not just hippies from the 60s who smoked a lot of pot. There's coke and heroin and LSD and all of that stuff. And now for folks in their 70s having to look back on it, hopefully, and not still be on it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The weird thing is we don't see the cocaine addicts nearly as much as we see the heroin addicts or the opiate addicts, you know, the pill poppers, because cocaine, you know, it's hard to overdose on cocaine. Very hard. You have to take huge amounts of it, and even then, you're not going to necessarily overdose. Your body's just going to kind of give out, whereas heroin and other opiates, you're going to overdose, and you can overdose in very, very small amounts, you know, especially if your immunity to it isn't high, or you just get a bad batch. So, yeah, I mean, we get 70-year-olds heroin addicts, overdoses all the time.
It's
common, but... yeah, it's crazy.
Matt, are you, as a paramedic, are you using that Narcan more and more? Are you seeing when you're...
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. It's pretty sad, actually, the amount of overdoses we get. I mean...
but the Narcan is crucial, right? This is what allows you to keep these folks alive and get them to the hospital.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely crucial. I mean, without it, there'd be, I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of more deaths. Wow. Per year. I mean, just a ridiculous amount. Yeah, we use it every day, practically several times a day.
How about that?
Yeah, I know there's states that certain cities now that are only giving it, you know, a certain amount of times to the same patient before they will not give it to that patient anymore, and yeah, then they'll just die.
Yeah, so how do you decide that Bob, the heroin addict, gets to die on the street? Oh, Bob, you get six. No more.
Right. Yeah, I mean...
I don't know. I don't know how you do it, man. I appreciate it. But I'll tell you what, and I can speak for everybody here, we appreciate what you do and what the men and women do that are paramedics every day that work selflessly and without any rounds of applause and a whole bunch of money being thrown at you. So, Matt, stay safe.
Oh, we appreciate that. Thank you. You guys stay safe, too.
Thanks, Matt.
That's a real frontline experience, mm-hmm, of what goes on out there.
Absolutely.
That was the exact words I was thinking. That's frontline life, yeah, right there. Mm-hmm.
And a couple times a day they use Narcan? I mean,
you said several.
Several.
So it could be several times a day.
That's insane.
I don't know how
you got somebody who is seizuring out in the street.
Right.
Or, you know, the respirations are almost gone. You pop them with Narcan to get them to the hospital.
Right.
What were you saying, Steve?
I was just going to ask how you get to the point legally where you deny life-saving treatment to somebody in the form of that Narcan. I don't know who's doing that.
Who makes that call?
I don't know that that's a call that's actually being made.
I'm glad you asked that question, because Steve Cochran, because that's just the thing, though. When they're out, they're saving lives. They're not going, oh, this is Cochran, here he is again. You know, they're not.
Well, he wasn't talking about Illinois. It's the things he's heard from around the country. I hope that's not true. But listen, Matt, thanks for the information. Kid of the Week coming up. An amazing Kid of the Week story and an amazing Kid of the Week. A follow-up, if you will, about the great Megan Bug, who will be back on the program after the headlines next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents the Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
We want to know your Kid of the Week stories. Kids you know, kids you've heard about, kids you want to make sure I hear about. Go to WGNradio.com, search Kid of the Week, take you right to the right page. And it'll be easy to follow from there. I can tell you this, and Andre, you know this to be true, in the 5 years since I came back to WGN, and in the 10 or so years that I was here before that, a countless number of Kids of the Week. There's nobody I'm more impressed with than young Megan Bug.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know.
And Megan rejoins us now. Good morning to you, Megan.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. Thanks for coming back on. I know last week was not a good week, but I just am never, ever not impressed by you. You're amazing.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to have Dr. Walter House join us in just a second. But your mission at your very young age is to make sure kids have an easier ride than you've had, I guess, right?
Absolutely.
Talk about that for a bit.
So, you know, we only get 3.8% of funds, which is not a lot at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we get 4%, which is $198 million, while breast cancer gets $543 million. It's just, it's not even close to being the same amount of funds. And, you know, I've seen so many of my friends die from a bunch of different types of childhood cancers, and I'm just ready to put an end to it.
I love the attitude, and I love your courage. And it's really important to get these numbers out, Megan, because I certainly was surprised to see this, and I think most people are, because I think most people make the common sense assumption that why wouldn't we be throwing maybe the most money at pediatric cancer so
exactly.
kids would have a life?
Exactly.
So how did you come across Dr. Walter House? Was he assigned to your case at some point, or how do you know him?
Yes, he was. My doctors communicate with him over my treatment plans. So my parents went up to Larry Children's Hospital to meet with him, and then I started raising money for him when I found out he was doing research on my type of cancer and had a lab. And he's an amazing doctor, and I'm so happy to be funding for him.
And you want, in addition to funding, I thought your dad's notes were really amazing. You want everybody listening and everybody that hears
Absolutely.
Your story to get a hold of every elected representative in their life, their state reps, their state senators, Senators Durbin and Duckworth and all your congressional reps as well, and say, where is the money for pediatric cancer, right?
Yes.
And if we go, we're going to put a link up we podcast this segment of the show. And as soon as that goes up, there'll be a link there as well at WGNradio.com. Steve Cochran Show on Facebook, Cochran Show on Twitter. Follow me there. You can see it as well. And the link will be there. You can click on to help this cause, to help Megan's dream, and to also make sure doctors like Dr. Walter House are not only funded in their research, but that funding comes from the federal government. And we wake up to the scourge of pediatric cancer like never before.
Yep.
Megan, you know, outside of the bad news from last week, I hope you've had some kind of fun recently.
I did. We went to Florida, and it was a nice getaway. It was relaxing, so I'm doing a lot better now. I'm feeling positive again.
I don't want to keep buttering you up here, but I just feel like, and I'm sure everybody in your life tells you this over and over again, but I don't know what drives you. You know, whether it's the passion you have, the anger you have about what's going on and what you see other kids going through, but you're really something else.
Thank you. I'm really determined to win, and not only for me, but, you know, for every other child who has passed away or fought the same thing.
Hang with me for 1 second here, because I want to talk to Dr. Walter House as well, and let me get him on here now. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, sir. And it's always better when I talk to Megan. I know you see a lot of amazing people in your practice, in your line of work, but boy, Megan is something special.
Oh, she's really remarkable. And, you know, we start talking about cancer biology, and she lights right up and just wants to talk more and more about it.
You know, when somebody gets sick, it can take several paths, but I think it says something about kids, that kids have, at least in my experience, as much or more fight than most adults do.
Oh, the kids really do have a lot of fight. One thing, they just want to keep on going. They want to keep living. They want to keep doing what they want to do.
Doctor, how are we, just I guess as a society, as a country, moving forward with so many of these clinical trials? And there's been success with many of these trials as well, correct?
Oh, we've had great success with clinical trials in pediatrics. Many large children's hospitals across the country all work together so that we have the best treatments going for kids that we possibly can. And that's been a very good system, and we've had tremendous success. But we need to do better.
The point we were making with Megan, and Megan's point specifically about the fact that pediatric cancer is so underfunded, is really remarkable. Do we know politically why that's the case? I mean, look, I salute the breast cancer fundraising effort. It's tremendous and well marketed and really well done. But why aren't we doing that for pediatric cancer?
I think it's really a matter of numbers. Childhood cancer is very rare. About 1 in 300 children under the age of 15 will develop cancer, while adult cancer is very common. About 1 in 3 adults develop cancers. So I think that's really what it all comes down to, is numbers of patients.
Is there a priority system with big pharma companies that you're aware of in regards to this, too? I mean, you know, if there's less money involved with kids, I suppose there's less money for your research.
That definitely plays into it, too.
So what you know, I don't want people to think that this can't be beaten, because it can, and it will be, and we want it to be beaten faster. So for the work you do and other doctors like you, I don't want people to think they can't help by any donation. A buck here, a buck there, or whatever you have is a big deal, right?
Oh, that's a huge deal. Yeah, funding is very tight. I think people would be very surprised at how tight funding is for pediatric cancer. So anything really makes a big difference.
Well, Doctor, it's great to talk to you. Please keep up the good work. And Megan, it's always an honor to have you on the show. I look forward to you being on many, many, many more times. And, you know, for folks, parents in particular, might be listening this morning who maybe got a bad news diagnosis about their own kid. What's the message?
You know, just you have to stay positive. That's the main goal. If you're not positive, then it's not going to work out for you. And that's something I've done my whole treatment, is I've always stayed positive, and I've always had a big fight in me. And that's what you have to do, because if you don't have that, it's not going to go the way you planned.
I can tell you this, Megan, you know, whenever you're home, I would never cross you. I would never tell you to clean your room. I would never, you know, tell you maybe you can't stay up and watch this show or that show, or question you on your homework. You would frighten me, Megan. It is a pleasure to have you on, and an honor as well. Keep the fight up. I know you will.
Thank you so much.
Megan Bug and Dr. Walterhaus. And she is a previous Kid of the Week and a perennial Kid of the Week. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to read you the notes that her dad wrote.
Yeah.
Because I think it really drives this message even home further.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Got a new girlfriend. Feels like he's on top.
6:53. We were talking with Megan Bug and Dr. Walterhaus. And again, the podcast for that interview going up here in just a matter of moments at WGNRadio.com. Follow me on Twitter at Cochran Show. Get it there. Also Facebook, Steve Cochran Show. Her dad wrote some amazing notes on the website, which we link with the podcast. So if you go to the podcast, you could hear the interview, but you could also pick up the link right there to go directly to her webpage. Tells you how to donate. Also tells you how to write a letter to your representative to let them know you want more funding for pediatric cancer, as opposed to the 3.8% of funding that goes now. But I just want to read what her dad wrote. As a parent, imagine being in these shoes. The highs are euphoric. The good times are euphoric. The lows are devastating. And the absolute worst is anxiously awaiting scan results, only to hear that the beast has returned again. This happened to Megan not once, not twice, but three times. Last Monday, they got the devastating news that Megan has a new tumor that showed up in her chest. Her dad continues, our heart sank to a new low, but as she has done so many times before, Megan's positive attitude and determination left us all with no choice but to join her in her battle, her crusade against childhood cancer. At times, he continues, Megan has made this battle seem almost too easy, because most people only see her infectious smile, positive attitude, and giving heart. I sometimes worry that people forget she's human. Even though she puts on a brave face, she's scared. A 16-year-old ought to be worried about what they're going to wear to prom, not whether they'll see their next prom. She's angry. A 16-year-old ought to be worried about an upcoming chemistry test and not wondering why cancer picked her. She's tired, and tired of it, I'm sure. A 16-year-old should be worn out from the day's volleyball practice, and not because of a 3-year all-out battle with cancer. At times, she feels broken. A 16-year-old ought to be making college plans and not preparing for yet another round against this evil foe. When I had to break the news to Megan that her scan showed another tumor in her chest, the devastation in her eyes was a look that will stay in my mind forever. Once I explained what another doctor, Dr. Salvi, had told me about the tumor, she asked to be alone. And, of course, I respected her wishes. It was when she was alone that her emotions all poured out. And there's accompanying video of this as well that when you click on that link, you'll see what we're talking about as well. Her dad continues, yes, Megan is human, and given all she's been through, she's entitled to all of those emotions. But if you'll notice in her video, she's focused not just on herself, but for every kid that fights this disease. She desperately wants a cure, not just for her, but for every kid who's traveling this ridiculously unfair journey with her. She wants a cure so that her friends who have lost their battles didn't do so in vain. She wants a cure as a tribute to her friend, Mia, to little Isaiah from England, and so many more. Megan is devastated, but her devastation quickly turned to a steely determination, and I think you could hear that in the phone call. She's more determined than ever to end the nightmare that is childhood cancer. You know, with all the news that's out there, all the negativity that swirls around us every day. I mean, how does that kid get the courage? It's because she's special. And thank God she's here, because we should have half the courage she has every single day. So thank you, Megan Bug, for coming on the show. Again, go to WGNRadio.com, Steve Cochran Show on Facebook, or follow me on Twitter at Cochran Show. Listen to the podcast of the interview if you missed it, and click on the link and help by writing a letter to your rep and donating whatever you can. 657, back with the news on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
We welcome in studio Sarah Ross, professor at the Art Institute of Chicago, and Tony Preckwinkle, Cook County Board President. Madam President, first, congratulations on your reelection.
Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate it. I'm grateful good. To the people of Cook County.
I'm sure. And it's good to see both of you.
Thank
so,
you.
Look, on the anniversary of Dr. King's assassination, we make a point of stopping down to remember his amazing life. But so many people won't have their lives remembered or stopped down to be remembered because of things that we need to fix in this country that aren't necessarily getting fixed. So you're here to talk about criminal justice reform. Professor, let's start with you. What are we doing wrong right off the top?
Well, so many things.
Pick one.
But I'll start with, I'm an artist, and so I think about these things from, you know, a sort of visual culture and a visual language perspective. And I work with incarcerated folks, artists. We, develop work at Stateville Prison. And I think that one of the things that we're not doing is looking to people who are impacted by incarceration and criminalization. In fact, a lot of folks who are incarcerated are also victims of violence. And so I think that one of the things that we can be doing is looking to leadership of formerly incarcerated people, looking at the work that people are doing inside prisons to think about, you know, ways that we might address harm that might move us away from incarceration.
So would we call it art therapy on some level to help along?
No, I would not call it art therapy because I'm not a therapist.
Okay.
But instead we're trying to think about how to address critical issues through a visual language and a visual culture.
President Preckwinkle, see these criminal injustice stories all the time. So what's your piece of this?
Well, the first thing I would want to remind our listeners is that the United States has 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the people in the world in prison. Let me try that again. 5% of the world's population and 25% of the people in the world.
Bad math.
So, you know, young people talk about incarceration nation. You know, we detain and incarcerate people at just an astonishing rate. And furthermore, we detain and incarcerate black and brown people at astronomical rates. In this country, white people are detained and incarcerated about the same rate as in Europe. And the reason we have so many people in prison is that we have these just tremendous levels, disproportionate impact of the criminal justice system on black and brown neighborhoods. It's astonishing and profoundly disturbing.
What would you say, though, now with all of the gun laws and all of the crime that we are addressing in Chicago, that the police officers are arresting the offenders, oftentimes repeat offenders who should not be out on the street with guns, and saying, hey, we need to make tougher gun laws so that these criminals, these violent criminals with weapons, illegal weapons, should not be out on the streets?
Well, I surely would never say that people with criminal backgrounds should have guns. Never. And I have been a strong proponent of sensible gun laws. I in my past life before I was in public office. I was a board member and then president of the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence. But, you know, I think we have to understand that we've got to focus on violent crime, you're right, mm-hmm. Shooters, and people who are accused of murder. But let me just say, the police, we can't have a police solution to the problems, an entirely police solution, but the police have to focus on violent crimes and not what I call petty antisocial behavior. You know, we have in this country a closure rate for murders in the 60%, mid-60s. But in the city of Chicago, it's 17 or 18% closure rate for murders, which means if you commit a murder, you have 4 chances out of 5 of getting away with it. And in terms of being shot, shooters, the closure rate for shootings is less than 10%. So you have 9 chances out of 10 of getting away with shooting somebody. And that's because, frankly, the way you solve crimes is to talk to people in the community. And if the police don't have a good relationship with people in the community, they can't solve crimes, which is what you see in the murders and shooting rate. And, of course, the fact that you don't solve murders and shootings leads people to mistrust law enforcement.
It's a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle. They don't trust law enforcement, and then they won't talk to people, you know, when bad things, they won't talk to the police when bad things happen. So it's kind of a chicken and egg proposition, but you're going to have to figure out how the police can work better with communities and have more community confidence. And at the same time, we have to invest in the communities that are so violent because they struggle with unemployment and illiteracy and their food deserts and the schools don't perform. I mean, it's a whole constellation of things. It's not just the violence is symptomatic of all the other bad things that are happening.
Sometimes though, we get bogged down in the long-term changing of the world as opposed to fixing some of the short-term stuff. So one of the things you talked about statistically there, is this a judge and an arrest problem or is this a lawyer problem in regards to putting so many black and brown people behind bars and so many white people not so much?
Well, I think we have to understand that this country is still troubled by profound racism, and that impacts how black and brown communities get policed. And black and brown people get arrested for things that white people don't. You know, I tell the story often of a Latina judge who I had supported for office, and she came to see me, and she said, you know, you have to understand that they're putting our kids, and she meant black and brown kids, in jail for things that, you know, white kids don't get put in jail for. Things like, you know, shooting dice on the sidewalk or having a couple marijuana cigarettes in your pocket. It seems to me that, you know, I'm not defending shooting dice on the sidewalk or smoking dope. Right. I'm just saying that we really want to put people in our criminal justice system for those things. I don't think so. And black and brown people get put in our criminal justice system for that, especially our young people.
I would also just add that, you know, if we listen to the young people that were, you know, marching around gun violence, they were not asking for tougher laws. They were asking for tougher laws once the, you know, violence had happened. They were asking for tougher gun laws before the violence has happened. And so if you look at a crime victims report that came out recently by the Alliance of Safety and Justice, you know, crime victims are not asking for longer sentences. They're asking for resources and communities and education before violent crime happens. So I think that if we kind of rethink you know, how we're addressing this, not through a punitive lens, but of like, what can we do beforehand? But just to also add to like the disparity is one of the projects I've been working on for a while now is looking at long-term sentencing and the other kinds of long terms it produces. And so, and since the, you know, 80s, there's been this massive buildup of long sentences for people. For crimes that had they been sentenced, you know, 30 years before or, you know, in before 1999, let's say, then their sentence would be wildly shorter. And, you know, people before 1999, let's say, when the Truth in Sentencing Law came in Illinois, you know, they did harmful things and did their time and got out. And now we lock up people for longer and longer times, such that in the United States, 1 in 9 people in U.S. prisons have life sentences, and 1 in 7 will die there because their sentences are so long.
Well, that's the thing. It's the imbalance. It's the, there's so such a lack of common sense. We got people back on the street who shouldn't be on the street, and we got people behind bars who shouldn't be behind bars. Where does this discussion go from here? In a moment.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
The Marshall Project, also involved here, nonprofit, nonpartisan online journalism organization, has been focused to fighting for appropriate criminal justice in the country for a long time. As we continue with Professor Sarah Ross from the Art Institute of Chicago and President Tony Preckwinkle from the Cook County Board, where does this discussion go from here? Because we want policymakers involved, we want public people involved, opinion makers, I suppose, would be the umbrella they fall under, right?
Yes, you know, one of the things we've done over the last 4 or 5 years is go to Springfield to try to make some changes in the way in which particularly young offenders get treated. And so we've really had some success there, which I'm very proud, and I'm grateful to Kim Fox, who was my chief of staff at the time, and said, you know, we've talked about doing things internally, but we have to change the macro environment, and we've got to do some things statewide. So one of the things we've done is to be sure that people who are 17 and under stay in the juvenile justice system, where the focus is on rehabilitation and not punishment. Actually, I think no teenager should be in the adult jail, but we were able to raise the age from 16 to 17, so you stay in the juvenile justice system until you reach your 18th birthday.
And you've had success with that in Cook County.
Well, we changed the law in the state, so that's been really helpful. We also reduced the number of crimes that would send young people automatically into adult courts, narrowed it down to the most violent allegations. So that's automatic transfer, reduced the number of young people that go into adult court as a result of changes in automatic transfer laws. We said no longer would a juvenile have a mandatory 5 years of probation, because what was happening is young people would serve their time, you know, meet their obligations, and then something stupid like a curfew violation would throw them back into the criminal justice system. So we reduced, we changed it so there's no longer mandatory 5-year probation for juveniles. It's at the discretion of the judge. It can be no probation, it can be 5 years probation or something in between. And the last thing we did was arrange for automatic expungement of young people's records for misdemeanors and some felonies. Because what was happening is in Illinois, only 3 young people out of every 1,000 who are eligible got their juvenile records expunged.
So that way, once they've cleaned up their life and they've served their time,
right,
they can get on with their life.
They can get their scholarships, they can get housing, and it won't be impeded by their juvenile record.
Right, and have it chase them for the rest of their life. Andres.
Exactly. So how do we meet in the middle? How do we keep the violent offenders off the street and these curfew violations and these very minor misdemeanors? How do we let them, I guess, expunge their records, or what it would be? Is it the judges? Is it through the legal system?
We changed the law so that expungements are automatic, and the governing bodies have to figure out how they're going to work that out. But that's what we did. We changed the laws.
But we got to have people vote. This is my constant harangue. People have to get involved in the system. We just had a midterm election where 30% of the people showed up in Cook County, and that's twice the number in 2014. The people walking by this window this morning on their way to work and listening in their cars, they got to get involved in the system. If this rings with you, get involved and express yourself with candidates who believe in changing the system.
I'm a history teacher, and I always say, you know, democracy is at the same time the best and the most fragile form of government on earth, because it depends on an active, engaged,
right,
informed citizenry.
I also think that, sometimes these policies can be maybe tedious for people to read and understand unless it directly impacts them.
Sure.
And even when it does directly impact them, it's hard to read the law if it's not something that you're used to. And this is why I think that artists and cultural makers are really important. Among, you know, educators and teachers and activists, because as artists, one of the things that we're thinking about is work that thinks structurally about the system. So I love, for instance, this project by that was done here in Chicago by Ryan Holland and Dan Cooper called Million Dollar Blocks. It's a map, an interactive map that you can go to and look at your block and see how much the state spends on incarceration in that one block. So the block that I live in has like something like $700,000 is spent on incarcerating people in my one block. And it begs a question of, like, what can we be doing differently with that money? Where can we be putting resources,
right,
again, before people are faced with bad choices, not after. And then also, too, art does this amazing thing that is affective work, kind of, you know, work that's about feeling. And I love the work of my colleague Maria Gaspar in 96 Acres. A couple years ago, she did this beautiful piece at the Hull House, which was a curtain that was in one of the rooms of the Hull House, and you could, you know, move it back and forth, and you could kind of push through it. And the curtain, printed on the curtain, was the wall of Cook County Jail. And you know, it was pretty dominating, but it was also mobile and felt permeable. And it kind of, again, begged the question of, like, this wall can be moved by us. And we can think about this.
Yeah, right.
Because
you break it down into images that are visually accessible for
and
people.
And experiential, something that, like, actually asks people to think in their gut about,
sure,
this.
I mentioned the Marshall Project. That's one place to go. Where else do we send people that want to get involved with the discussion?
Well, There are a number of not-for-profit organizations that support people who are returning citizens. Safer Foundation comes immediately to mind. There are organizations like Thresholds, which support people in the community who are struggling with mental illness. And, you know, I think we have to understand that one of the things that's so disturbing about our country is that we detain and incarcerate people who are struggling with mental illness. So the Thresholds people came to visit me early on in my tenure and said, you have to understand that a quarter to a third of the people in jail are people who are struggling with mental illness.
Right.
And some of them have addiction issues, substance abuse issues. They have what we call a dual diagnosis. But we're not providing enough support for people who struggle with mental illness, particularly in poor communities of color. We're, as I said, we're arresting people for petty antisocial behavior instead of focusing on violent crime, which is is so disturbing to so many of our communities. I mean, we've got some real challenges, but I think there are access points for individuals in community organizations that support young people who are at risk. Build comes immediately to mind. It's one of the organizations that we have supported in the county and the work they do with at-risk youth.
They link these through your website? I mean, do you list these as resources?
Yeah. CookCountyIL.gov is our is the way you can get to our programming. And our Justice Advisory Council has spent almost $18 million in the last 8 years trying to support community organizations that work on violence prevention, anti-recidivism efforts, trying to keep people from returning to jail or prison, and restorative justice.
When you talk to, I'll leave you on this because we're going to run out of time, but Professor, when you talk to inmates, when you're just sitting with those who have been incarcerated, I think what people want to hear as well is they realize they made a mistake and they want to turn their lives around. So what type of percentage even or a number of folks are you seeing that accept that?
Almost everybody. I mean, people don't want to be defined by the worst thing they did in their lives. Nobody here does, you know. So people, you know, often committed crimes when they were young. They think about it all the time. They think about what loss means. And they think about, you know, what it means for them now, you know, producing other kinds of loss, like loss from their own family. So I think that it's the idea that people, you know, are randomly committing crimes without any thought, I think is, you know, that might be people with severe mental health issues that don't have that sort of compass. A lot of people
are. But it's
are,
not the majority.
Right.
Yeah. Nice to see both of you. I appreciate the work you're doing. And again, give them the website, President Preckwinkle, that sent them to initially. Cook County?
CookCountyIL.gov will tell you where we're investing, in, as I said, in restorative justice, violence prevention, and anti-recidivism efforts.
Redesigning the system. It's not going to happen overnight, but why not start today? Back with more in a moment. And the headlines from you next on 720 WGN. Thanks again for Tony Preckwinkle and Sarah Ross, Professor Ross and President Preckwinkle for being here. Carol Bogert is the president of the Marshall Project. Tomorrow night, the School of the Art Institute of Chicago and the Illinois Humanities present a panel discussion on redesigning the system. It's tomorrow night right after work if you choose to attend from 6 to 7:15. At the Art Institute of Chicago, Fullerton Hall, 111 South Michigan. And you can reserve your seat through the link. Is the link tied to our podcast of that as well? Okay, so the podcast of that interview, where all our podcasts can be found, wherever you get our podcast, we'll have the link for that event as well. 7:40.
Somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
On the last night of his life, Martin Luther King spoke to striking garbage workers in Memphis, Tennessee. And said he might not get to the mountaintop with you, but he knew as a people they would get to the mountaintop. A really goosebumpy speech, to use a ridiculous term for it. But if you've never seen it, the mountaintop speech, easy to find. Google that up today and take a look. The amazing life of Dr. Martin Luther King ended at the age of 38. The world descends upon Memphis, Tennessee tonight and tomorrow. We'll talk to Reverend Jesse Jackson later. And our own Doma T. Pongo is on the way today. Good morning to you. Doma T.
Goosebump is the perfect word, actually. Good morning to you, Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Yeah, goosebumpy. That's why I was an English major. I pulled that one.
That's like the perfect word, though. I don't know if there's any word more appropriate to describe what you feel when you watch that speech. I was editing, you know, the series ran earlier today from the mountaintop, and I was editing the speech, and I had so much trouble trying to figure out what line to take because each and every one sent chills down your spine. It was amazing to listen to.
Yeah, the part where he goes, "I'm not worried tonight. I'm not worried tonight," and he launches into the piece about I might not get there with you. I mean, he was 38 years old. 38. And he had no idea he would die the next day. It's just an amazing final speech.
Absolutely. He spoke like someone who'd been here before.
Right.
You know, he spoke like someone who'd been here before. I think prophetic and goosebumpy are the perfect ways to describe that speech. And it's funny, I talked to, in the series, talked to Reverend Jesse Jackson, who you'll speak to later today, about those last moments, his last moments with Dr. King. And he talked about all of these eerie things, these weird conversations he was having with King about, you know, he talked to King about this saxophone rendition of Mahalia Jackson's Precious Lord, Take My Hand. And he played it for him weeks prior. And King said, "Hey, tonight, can you make sure you play that song again?" And as he was having that conversation, that's when that shot rang out. And so it was all of these moments where it seemed like King knew what was about to happen.
Domati, what do you expect the mood to be like? It's somber, yet poetic and marking just a revolution and a movement. So what do you expect the mood to be like?
You know, last night I went to Rainbow Push headquarters and met with about two dozen soul travelers from the age of 10 to literally 90 years old. And I was wondering if the mood would be foreboding. Is it somber? Is it celebratory? And honestly, Andrea, it depends on who you ask. So for one of the elders I spoke to, he felt like it was a culmination of years of his work in activism, and he was touched to see young people from the Roosevelt University of Chicago going down to Memphis. So for him, it was celebratory. But the younger people, they felt like the country has changed so much and that we've regressed in the areas of civil rights in some ways. Well, they feel like they're somewhat angered. And a lot of them are learning more about Dr. King that they didn't learn in school. So they're also angered about some messages of his platform that they felt got lost in the shuffle. And then there are others who looked at this opportunity as fulfilling their purpose and kind of a rite of passage as African Americans going back to Memphis, learning more about King and trying to figure out where we go from here.
Where will most of the events take place in Memphis? The motel where Dr. King died isn't that a museum now?
Yeah, it's the National Civil Rights Museum now. They're sponsoring a ton of events. A lot of what's happening will be happening there. There's going to be an event this evening, actually, at the church where King gave that goosebumpy speech, Church of God in Christ there in Memphis. And yesterday, former Attorney General Eric Holder spoke in downtown Memphis to commemorate the kicking off of these events. He spoke at the Peabody Hotel. So a lot of speakers, Dr. Bernice King, King's children expected to be in attendance tonight as well.
And on those final moments of his life, as you said, you spoke with Reverend Jackson. He'll be on with us in about an hour. But you think about that from his perspective as well. He was a kid. Mm-hmm. He was just a kid, and he was around the greatest speech maker of his time and someone who is truly changing the world. Everybody who was in Dr. King's circle had to be amazed about that time and how short it actually was. It must have seemed like a blip.
Yeah, no, seriously. And he talked about the vacuum that it left when that happened. And not only that, but the riots that happened in Chicago subsequently after King passed away. And a lot of these areas, you know, the Tribune just did a story about it. A lot of those areas on the west side of Chicago that rioted when King died are still in the same conditions that they were almost 50 years ago.
That's not an exaggeration for people that don't know. Some of those neighborhoods that were burned to the ground have never in 50 years been reconstructed.
Not at all. At all. And so, you know, when you talk about, you know, when I was talking to Reverend Jackson, I said, well, did you envision a day, you know, this is kind of surreal, you know, losing your friend. Did you envision a day where you'd wake up and you'd see so many people from different walks of life following in your footsteps? And he said, well, yes. Well, King was a visionary, and this is what he expected. He expected our method of activism, violence resistance. He said, really, there's no choice but to resist nonviolently, because violent resistance just means we all kill each other, you know. So we're talking about maintaining humanity, maintaining human rights. The only way to do it is through nonviolent resistance. And someone yesterday that I spoke with made a really good point. They said that nonviolent resistance is still resistance. And so sometimes we look at this more sanitized view of Dr. King as if he wasn't still a disruptor. And, you know, an elderly gentleman said, a lot of the same people I talk to who hate Colin Kaepernick love Dr. King, as if they're not two sides of the same coin. Yeah. Whether you agree with the protest or not, nonviolent, symbolic protest, King would have approved of it in his point of view.
Great points. And Domati, something you said resonated as well. These are people from all ages going down to mark this day and this event from 10 to 90. So it's kind of like live history in the making.
Yes, yes. And it's surreal to see, because, I mean, you know, you speak with people, you think you're just gonna have a conversation with this young man. Hey, how does it feel to be going to Memphis? And then he starts to school you on civil rights activism and how young people with, you know, who have been advocating for gun control, how they've inspired him. And this breadth of knowledge that just shows you that this hand of mentorship has been on him from the Rainbow Push Coalition. And in a lot of ways, you know, social media wouldn't tell you this, but there are a lot of people who are really active and really passionate still about human rights and still passionate about the message of Dr. King.
There's an amazing photo, Domati, which you may have seen, but I direct people to as well, which ties to the whole movement. And that's Malcolm X greeting Martin Luther King as they were both attending the Senate debate of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And over the course of their lives, what I think we all forget is Malcolm X moderated before he was killed at 38 years old. And Dr. King got a little more agitated. And they were headed towards meeting in the middle when their lives were both cut short. But it's an amazing story, and we're glad you're on it. And you did a nice job with this special series we're running as well. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you. And there's more coming. So tonight I'll be in Memphis, and I'll have a recap of my conversations with those travelers from Chicago heading down to Memphis that'll air in the series tomorrow. And you hit the nail on the head. I wonder where each of them would be on either end of the spectrum, kind of meeting in the middle, had they both been able to live their lives.
Think about it. Both of those men would be 88 years old. Now, 88, that's not, you know, you're no spring chicken, but 88, people live to be 90, 95, 100 with much more regularity now. And it is amazing. Absolutely. To think what the world could have been.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think you raise a good point. I think it's important that we have this idea from both of them that their work was done when they died. But I think it's very important to understand that humans continue to evolve. And we can only imagine who they would have become had they been able to live to 88, 90, 95, 100.
Glad you're on it, Domati. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Domati Pongo covering the MLK events in Memphis for WJN Radio.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
You know, throughout the day today, I hope you'll glance at your bracelet. Do you have your WWSJD bracelet? You guys have those, right?
What would
Sister Jean do?
Oh, I thought it was, yeah, Steve Cochran, and that you...
Oh, no, WWSJD.
What would Sister Jean do?
Mm-hmm. You know, you think about Loyola's exit in the Final Four, and a lot of us lost interest beyond that.
Uh-huh.
Not Super Joe. Super Joe, big-time Michigan fan.
Yeah.
But if Michigan had won last night, check this out. Derek Stevens is the CEO of D Las Vegas Hotel and Casino, an alumni of University of Michigan. Big time Wolverines fan. They faced 40-1 odds of winning last night for the bet that he placed, because Villanova was as good as we thought they would be.
Mm-hmm.
So his Vegas neighbor, Tillman Fertitta, decided that maybe they ought to take a chance. Fertitta owns the Golden Nugget Casino as well as the Houston Rockets. Didn't you spend some time in Houston?
I did. Love a good solid 9 months in Houston. One of my great radio stops, Steve.
Do you know Tillman Fertitta?
I don't, but I feel a sense of loss that I don't, Steve, is what I'm trying to say.
Frittata, not frittata, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. But the bottom line here is this. The two men got together and placed a bet that would have paid them both $1 million if Michigan won. Straight up.
They did.
Now, it's not like they don't have it, because they do. They own hotels and casinos, but still.
They made the bet, I believe, at the beginning of the tournament, right? 25.
That's when they were 40-1. Yeah.
$25,000, 40-1.
Yeah.
To win a mill.
Now, they probably have $25,000 in the change container in their car.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of quarters, by the way. But still, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
Serious dough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a rough loss.
I have not placed a $25,000 bet in my life anywhere.
What is the largest bet you've ever made? Steve, would you like to share that?
Yeah, I probably made a $1,000 bet once.
Okay.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I think the highest I ever made was $25,000.
$25,000?
No.
Bucks?
$25?
Yeah. Right. Maybe $100 if I'm doubling down.
Did you win that grand bet?
Actually, I did. Yeah. And it was a 5-1, so that was a good night.
Oh. Wow, Steve Cochran.
Wait. Care to tell us what game you were playing?
Darts. Balloon darts. No, it was unbelievable. 7:57. Dean's coming up after 8 on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Well, we've got ourselves a celebrity split. Kind of a surprising one.
Very.
Hi, Dean. How are you?
I'm recovering from the tragic news that we're about to report.
Well, here's the deal. These two couldn't keep their hands off each other.
Yep.
And one of Hollywood's most attractive couples. One of them very bendy. Yeah, she could bend in a lot of different directions.
Both of them pretty flexible.
Was he bendy as well?
They met on a dance movie.
Cool.
Yeah. A Step, I think it was called.
And didn't he appear as a stripper in a movie that a lot of women like?
He was Magic Mike.
I believe we're talking about Channing Tatum.
And his wife?
Or as I call him, Chan, the Chan Man.
Jenna DeWitt, is that?
Jenna Dewan.
Dewan. Oh,
Jenna Dewan,
Dewan. They've always
Tatum
been
Tatum for now.
PDA.
They were all
always
over each
PDA.
Other all the time.
They just released this adorable picture on what was this? There was some holiday where a little girl painted up their faces, and they were, you know, the parents, Channing and Jenna, were all cuddly duddly, you know, with their faces painted up. So cute by their.
See how Dean worked the clown reference?
Mm-hmm.
Their little girl.
The cuddly duddly reference. All right, so what do we know?
We simply know that they issued a statement yesterday saying that they've decided to end their marriage.
You got to warn people, Dean. If they didn't like Conscious Uncoupling, they will not like this statement.
The actual verbal write out.
Yes,
said they issued this fairly long statement that when you actually see they posted a picture of the statement that looks like the Declaration of Independence.
Oh my God.
Was it on a scroll?
It kind of looks like it was on a scroll. And I don't know. I mean, when you issue a statement like that, does John Hancock need to sign it and Thomas Jefferson?
It seems odd.
Seems odd to me.
I didn't know he went by Chan either.
It's the Chan man.
Chan.
He's a Chan man. The Chanster.
He said that they said in their statement that the couple have lovingly chosen to separate as a couple. And that there's not one specific event that led to this decision.
You know, look.
Then why are they splitting up?
Yeah.
I need more.
Absolutely nothing has changed, they claim.
Well, except for the part that we're not married anymore.
Something's changed.
Yeah. As people, my husband and I are both divorced, and this is not what
your
statements look like.
No, I mean, you may get to a point of lovingly uncoupling, but it's not right when you do it.
Yeah, and I know couples that, decided that they could continue to be best friends. Mm-hmm. They just could not live with each other. They learned that in the time that they were married.
Yeah, but they made it sound like they got home and went, we got to get a couple things done here. What are we doing tomorrow?
Home Depot.
We got to run to the Jewel. Let's lovingly uncouple.
I don't get it.
Yes, I mean, something changed. I mean, to say that not, that there's no event that led to this decision.
Dean, they said, we're just two best friends realizing it's time to take some space and help each other live our most joyous, fulfilled lives as possible.
Yeah, that's the part where I threw up a little in my mouth.
No, that part I get. That,
oh, you do?
That part I get.
Helping each other?
That part I get. You know, this is like way more serious than I'm sure we want to be right now, but my parents divorced when I was about 13 or 14. And
I never knew that.
They sat down with me then. And said that, you know, we're going to be, your dad and I will be best friends forever. And, you know, we've just decided that, you know, this is the best thing to do. And then later, when my dad was dying, my mother would go to visit him all the time. And I thought, well, I said to her, this is so nice of you to, you know, my dad had gotten remarried.
Uh-huh.
This is so nice of you to go visit dad all the time.
And what'd your mom say?
And she said, we've been best friends for 50 years. You know, why wouldn't I go and visit him?
I think if you're healthy between the ears and in the heart in any form, and you have kids, you're connected. You're connected.
Yeah. So I can see where people decide that they're better apart than together,
mm-hmm.
but something comes of that. Insiders.
I think I know.
What's that?
Trump.
Oh, no.
One of them liked Trump, one of them didn't.
Possible.
And last week they were watching Roseanne and the truth came out.
Yeah. There's a lot of dynamics like that going on right now.
I'm not saying that your parents weren't best friends that whole time, but sometimes maybe you become best friends after the difficult challenges of that time while the kids are still younger.
That may be the case.
And you're not agreeing on everything.
When you're away from each other.
I would highly recommend that route if you're separating. Sit down with your kids. Make sure they know they're loved. Make sure they know it's not their fault. And rip each other to shreds in your own time. Never make it a part of them. Never make it the kids' issue.
Insiders are saying that the pressure of both of them having to be away for long periods of time while they make movies...
Uh-huh.
May have contributed greatly.
See, I think that's best. That's best for relationships when you have a lot of time away.
Yeah.
See, I would think the opposite.
Keeps it fresh.
There's not people leaving empty Diet Coke boxes.
Oh, no.
Refrigerator.
Oh, you mean the
Wait
stuff that
minute.
Really tears a relationship
the
apart?
The truth comes out.
all right, still to come. I mentioned Roseanne. There's Roseanne news. There is an album tied to Jesus Christ Superstar that's coming out, which is totally coincidental. It's not like they planned this would happen. And Nick Cannon is getting weirder than ever, he's in the news. We got some show business stuff to get to.
Steve,
indeed.
Also, I've got, I stop and get coffee every morning, and the place where I go to get coffee has a little trivia attached to their coffee cups.
Okay, you got a question for us.
So I've got a trivia question to see if people can help me win a free donut.
It's a cup question coming up. Maybe a new game. Stand by.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richardson, entertainment editor, Channel 9720.
All right, back to Dean. Coming up, stand by for Dean's Coffee Cup Trivia. It is a long-standing game. We have played many, many times before, Dean, as you know.
Okay.
Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson divorcing, just handed to me
what?
Just a second ago.
Wait a minute. Are you kidding?
That's just as shocking as Channing Tatum
Come on.
And Jenna.
Michael J. Fox and Tracy Pollan, over as of this morning.
You're lying.
Fake news.
This is all, you know what? This is
it's
April Fool's
news.
Part 2 and 3.
Kevin Bacon and Kyra Sedgwick,
no.
Over.
Yep.
Carl Reiner and his wife split. They need some time apart.
After 97 years together.
Channing Tatum and Jenna Dewan.
That one's true.
And Jenna Dewan's been calling my cell phone nonstop. Yep. Hello.
Again?
My eyes are up here.
Steve and Halle Berry, their relationship seems to be quite solid. People have been texting and axing me.
Denzel and his wife, over. Just handed to me.
No.
Just a second ago. All right, so Roseanne, huge numbers. 22 million people saw the debut of Roseanne and the return last week. A lot of Trump Roseanne news afterwards. Maybe she's throwing out conspiracy
theories. I would argue that much of that was people who were curious to see what they were going to do. I'd be really curious to see what the ratings are like this week and in the next couple of weeks.
Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman, done.
No.
Just handed to me just a moment ago. All right, so what's the Roseanne announcement?
But the news today is that President Trump will not be mentioned in the future episodes of Roseanne, according to Sarah Gilbert, who plays the daughter Darlene. She's also really one of the people that got this reboot put together, she's one of the big producers of the show, said the intention was never to put focus on politics or to align itself with one candidate or the other. Roseanne's character is a Trump supporter, but it's not going to be a big issue in the future. They want to stay focused on family drama, not on politics.
Hey, any word, Dean, on, because I like the first episode, any word on recurring cast members coming back, Johnny Galecki or any
he
of the
will be
old?
Back.
Oh,
Johnny,
he will be. Okay.
Johnny Galecki will be back. Oh. That's the only one that I've heard of. I don't know, Martin Mull?
He was on there. Right.
He was the manager at the Chop Meat place.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
I was in a band called Johnny Galecki Will Be Back.
And Martin Rolls Chop Meat.
All right, did you see numbers? Wow, what happened to me? Did you see numbers on Jesus?
Say, Grandma?
Did you see numbers on Jesus Christ Superstar?
Where's my teeth? Yes, I did.
How big was it?
They were through the roof.
Okay.
They were absolutely through the roof. Highest rated TV musical so far. And easily beat all the competition on Sunday night.
And again, I repeat what I said yesterday. Thank God it wasn't Cats. Doesn't mean Andrew Lloyd Webber is going to do that to us, is it?
So some people love. I personally have always hated Cats, and a lot of people.
Either
you love it or you don't, and I cannot stand it.
I haven't been to Broadway that many times, but I've been there a fair amount. It's literally the only play, including elementary school and middle school and high school plays. It's the only play I've ever walked out of, Cats.
No.
Oh, I couldn't stand it.
I couldn't either.
Ridiculous.
I liked it. Couldn't deal with it.
I liked Memory. Of course, I also saw it when I was like 10.
The music is great.
Yeah. The costumes.
The costumes and the story.
Yeah.
Irritating.
Well, when you're 10, you're just like, save some
time, bring out a scratching post right in the center of the stage, let the kiddies come out and scratch it, sing a couple of songs, call it a night.
If I want to see people dressed up in kitty cat costumes, there's this club I go to on Saturday nights.
Oh, kitty cat.
Dean.
Yeah. Ow, ow. That's between Dean and the felines.
So, critically acclaimed, the Jesus Christ Superstar Live. Ratings were through the roof, except for Bill O'Reilly, who tweeted yesterday that he didn't know the Jesus of Nazareth ran a tattoo parlor. And said, geez. Chrissy Teigen, the wife of John Legend, who played Jesus in it, said, yes, and the parlor didn't have to pay anyone off $32 million.
Tremendous. High five. Good for her.
All of that said, now, the soundtrack from Jesus Christ Superstar, believe it or not, is going to be released as a full album. It's going to be released digitally this coming Friday on all the regular, you know, digital platforms, and then as a 2-CD set on April the 27th.
You got to see the video to understand fully that Nick Cannon's getting weirder than ever. But he is talking about MLK, and Dean will run that throughout the morning on Channel 9 if you haven't seen it already.
Did you see the video that I ran earlier
I did.
Today with his turban on?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be my new look for 2018.
That's a hot call by you. That's solid. I like that. I'll get behind that.
It's full
and
turban,
giggle.
Open on the top so the heat can get out. It's not going to be too hot.
I couldn't help but notice it was aerodynamic.
Very, this is going to be my new look when you see me out in the street. Very Aladdin when you see me at the jewel store.
And if people come up and rub your tummy, it's good luck in the pick three.
You've never had a friend like Dean.
all right, so you have one question for us.
Oh, yeah. So
it's coffee cup trivia.
Well, when I get my coffee, you know, there's only one place open at 3 o'clock in the morning to get coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And it rhymes, I don't want to give them a free plug, but it rhymes with Schmunkin' Mo Nuts.
I have no idea who that could be.
You get the coffee, and they've got a little tag on the cup with trivia.
Okay.
And, you know, I always play the trivia. It's fun. And,
sure.
And maybe you win something.
Sure.
So today's trivia, I'm not 100% sure on this, and I didn't want to cheat and look it up. Which movie did not include Seth Rogen? Is it A, Step Brothers?
Okay.
B, Superbad? C, Funny People? Or D, Grown Ups?
It's the first one. It's Step Brothers. Step Brothers did not include Seth Rogen.
Anybody else? Any other picks?
I would say number one as well.
I would say Step Brothers also. Okay.
Sandberg says Step Brothers as well.
Okay, we're all going with Step Brothers.
Is that what you said, Dean?
Okay. No, I actually know that he was in Step Brothers.
Oh, he was?
I was going to go with the third one. What was that third one?
But I scratch here. Funny People was the third one.
Yeah.
He was, yeah, I think he was in that too.
Yeah, I think he was too.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, thanks. I just scratched off Step Brothers. It says no.
Good job, Steve.
Funny,
and Sandberg.
Funny people, no.
Uh huh.
Grown ups. I would have won if I had scratched grown-ups.
Grown-ups. He wasn't in grown-ups.
Grown-ups.
Here's the thing. The only way I would change a segment is if Schmunkin Monuts decides to just give you the answer instead of playing four-part scratch-off.
I would have won a free donut if we'd gotten that right.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Wait,
sorry.
Don't you win no matter what? You just scratch the thing, you turn it in?
No, well, you got to, you know.
Just one scratch-off.
If you have a wrong, yeah, you can
just
only,
one. Really?
You can't scratch off three like I just did.
Yeah. You're like, did I win?
Yeah. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks for nothing, you guys.
Yeah. Good.
Sorry,
Dean. Hey, by the way, good out.
Fucking Monuts, signing off.
That's Dean.
Never had a friend like Dean.
Headlines next, 720 WGN.
And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
And with that, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King turned away from the mic, almost sort of collapsed a bit into the arms of some of the guys that were with him, and walked off stage. And the final speech he would make, he was killed the next day. And MLK 50 week continues in Memphis. Our own Domiti Pongo is there. He will report from there all day. I believe Ryan Burrow there for ABC as well.
Yes, he is. They're both down there, yep.
So we will continue to advise you to stick close to WGN. We'll keep you up to date with what's happening there. But 50 years ago, now you weren't even a twinkle in the bottle of wine that your parents would actually buy.
True.
And Mark Harmon, you weren't around either. But, you know, an old guy like me.
You remember?
I do remember. Mm-hmm. I was 7 years old, and I just turned seven. Wasn't driving yet. But I remember going somewhere with my parents. And coming on, this is the three-channel universe, and clicking on the TV, and my father, it's funny, the things that stick in your head, and I remember my father saying, don't be turning the TV on, it's time to go to bed, school night. And the news flash came on that Martin Luther King had been killed.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew of Dr. F7, right?
Right.
So I knew of Dr. King, I didn't know his significance, obviously, but I knew he was famous. And I knew he was fighting for the rights of black folks.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a vivid memory of it like it was yesterday.
Did your parents at that point kind of turn to you and kind of explain what was happening?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. They said, turn the TV off. Go to bed.
Okay.
We didn't have a lot of long talks about
And plus
I was seven.
Plus it's different now. Yeah. I mean, now you talk to your kids about that. Back then it was for all of us, go to bed.
But one of the more amazing things that comes out of that night, and it's funny because the Kennedys documentary that's running on CNN now is great. And I think I'm an expert on the Kennedys because I've paid attention to history. There's a million things that I've learned in the three or four episodes that I didn't know. You've been watching it, Mike?
Yeah, I've been watching it. There was the University of Alabama had their first African-American student, and the Kennedys, the way they... We're dealing with the governor of Alabama at the time, and it was just unbelievable to watch how that all went down. And the courage of JFK.
It's crazy.
Isn't it cool to see the old footage, too, of that?
Yeah, it makes it much more real.
Oh,
well, Bobby Kennedy, I believe I'm right about this, was in Indianapolis and was speaking at an urban center of sorts there. And the crowd was, you know, vastly majority African-American. And he got word before he went up to speak that Martin Luther King had died. And they wanted to get him out of there. His security people, everybody wanted him out. Now, keep in mind, this is April of 1968. So this is just about 6-7 weeks before he would be killed out in California. So they want to get Bobby Kennedy out of there. And this is, again, I've said this earlier this morning. Just dial up on Google today the MLK final speech. And listen to the words. We played you a piece of it coming into this segment. But in addition to that, dial-up Bobby Kennedy announces MLK death, and you'll see what he did. He refused to leave, and he walked out to that young, potentially militant, potentially violent black crowd and told them Dr. King had been murdered. And then proceeded to say, I understand why you're upset. I'm upset as well. I lost someone I loved to a gun as well, and made that speech that night.
Yeah. It is, you know, you used this term before, but it's true. It gives you goosebumps. Oh, I know you say goosebumpy, but yeah, it really
it's
does.
Amazing.
It's talking about
it's
it.
Absolutely amazing.
It.
But those are two speeches, and the Kennedy one's very short, more of an announcement than a speech, but two things I'd recommend on the eve of this historic day, 50 years to the day tomorrow in Memphis when Martin Luther King was killed.
Because I've been to the mountaintop. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land.
It's Dr. Martin Luther King, and again, that speech referenced a moment before. We're standing by for the Reverend Jackson, who, as you can imagine, is being mobbed in Memphis as he continues to do interviews and various media accountability, going through this celebration of MLK 50. It's funny to call it a celebration because we're honoring 50 years of memories, but it is 50 years since the murder of Dr. King,
right.
But it causes us all to stop down and talk about the greatness of Martin Luther King. Chaz Ebert's going to join us here in a little bit, but while we wait for Dr. King, I wanted to say an early hi to you, if you don't mind jumping on.
Jackson.
What did I say?
Dr. King.
Well, that would be nice if we could get Dr. yeah. King to show up. Reverend Jackson, thank you for that. Chaz, nice to see you.
Good morning. Thank you. It's good to be here, Steve.
We're going to talk a little bit about the reason for your drop by. And, of course, you can drop by anytime in a few minutes. But we were talking about Dr. King off the air. And if not for your own event, you'd probably be in Memphis, I guess, huh?
Yes, I would be there. My husband, Roger Ebert, passed away the same day as Dr. King was assassinated, years later, of course. And I'm, you know, I would be in Memphis if I wasn't here doing what I'm doing for Empathy Day in Chicago, but...
And Empathy Day is important. You know, we talk about everybody can be a little nicer to each other, but there's a difference between empathy and just kindness, right?
There is a difference, although kindness is a component of it. One of the reasons for having empathy, for putting yourself in someone else's shoes, is to help alleviate the suffering of someone else. You know, an act of kindness can derive from empathizing with someone.
Sure. And Andre?
And I know we're going to talk much more depth about Empathy Day and this too, but I knew Chaz and Roger from the U of I, from Ebert Fest that you started. And honest to God, Steve, everyone would come back for this.
Sure.
And you and Roger would stand there and talk to film students, answer yes. questions. I mean, there'd be a longer line after the movie than the length of the movie was. But you always mm-hmm. talk to everybody, every last student who came to see you.
You know what, Andrea? We're celebrating the 20th anniversary of Ebert Fest, yep. April 18th through the 22nd down in Champaign, and I love it, and I love talking to the people, and Roger was energized
yeah.
by it.
Yeah,
I had a chance to know Roger a little bit, you know, right around the time that he and Gene were becoming big stars. And this is nothing I've said publicly before. Gene could be a little prickly. Gene could be a little difficult.
Oh no!
Yeah, just a touch. But Roger yes. was always a teddy bear. Even if on the air he came across yeah. as, you know, the tough guy, he was always a teddy bear.
Yeah.
But illness changes people. And did he yeah. did he develop a deeper empathy after he got sick?
He certainly did. I mean, Roger was a teddy bear, but he had his, he could be yeah. very. He had his side because he was also he wanted things to be right. And so mm-hmm. He could be a perfectionist about things if he didn't think you were upholding your end on something. And so, and that's how he was with Gene. You could mm-hmm. see it in their relationship. Gene was prickly, but Gene was also a sweetheart. And, of course, illness does, it doesn't make everyone empathize more, but it certainly did with Roger.
Part of the sweetness, the sadness, I suppose, the tragic part, but also part of the sweetness of your relationship is how much you were able to do for Roger as he got sicker, because I thought one of the more cruel things about this is losing the ability to speak eventually, you know, in the way that he wanted to. And I suppose that probably was the hardest, wasn't it?
Well, you know, we talked about it as some cosmic joke at first. I mean, what is high ironic that someone who made his living in broadcasting lost his physical ability to speak, but actually his messages became even more deeper and more profound. He used the internet and connected with so many more people after he lost his physical voice, and he realized that too.
You look at the voice recognition technology now too, and how that's changed for people that suffer a loss of their voice, and the communication gets better every day for folks that are suffering that sort of battle.
At that time, you know, I actually went to Scotland. I didn't go to Scotland, but I contacted a company in Scotland called Seraproc to make a custom voice for Roger.
And really?
Yes, I did. And we got all of his recordings over all of the years. We got the TV broadcasting, radio stuff, and sent it to Scotland so that they could create a custom voice for him. What we found, interestingly enough, I'm laughing because I remember when Roger, when they told us that some of the things from the Siskel and Ebert show, they said,
it's okay.
It's not that funny, but I'm just remembering Roger. He said, that damn gene, because they couldn't eliminate some of the background of what Gene was saying.
Because he talked over each other.
So he's talking over him. So they see us. So he said, Gene is even messing up with my custom voice.
Because he's in the background talking over him.
Well, you remember, Gene went first, so we had to haunt him a little bit, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But eventually they were able to make a custom voice for him.
And it makes a huge difference, obviously.
Yeah.
The number four empathy, including citywide distribution of kindness cards and bracelets. And a day for empathy includes scholarships. We'll get into all of that, but I want to ask you about something else.
Okay.
I love movies.
Yeah.
I've never loved them less. Am I getting old, or is it a situation where the quality has changed and the genres have changed? Because it seems like every week there's a new horror film or there's a new sci-fi type film, and I'm not a fan of either one.
Oh, but you know, I hope you see Annihilation. Annihilation, where they have this, and not just because it's a team of women who are in the sci-fi thing. But
my loved Wonder Woman.
This is good.
Yeah.
Okay, and Annihilation is good, and I saw one last night called A Quiet Place
that
I think you might like. I don't know if it's out at the movies yet, but if she went to see the screening for it.
Okay, she might. She sees at least three movies a week.
Okay.
I'm not kidding you.
All right.
Is this John Krasinski?
John Krasinski and Emily Blunt.
Yeah. Hello.
It is, you know what, it reminded me of the old-fashioned movies because it's suspenseful.
So it's more Alfred Hitchcock. It's not just blood and gore.
If you like Alfred Hitchcock, you should like A Quiet Place.
All right.
What do you think, Chaz? I want your opinion and what you think Roger would think, too, of kind of this Me Too movement and Wonder Woman huge successes, Patty Jenkins, female filmmakers and directors kind of getting their just due now.
Roger would have been so proud of Patty Jenkins. Patty Jenkins actually thanked Roger from the stage when she won a nomination for the movie Monster that Charlize Theron, and she said that Roger really boosted that movie. He loved it so much, and he loved Patty Jenkins' direction and Charlize Theron's acting in that movie. He would have loved, and she wrote to me when she did Wonder Woman and said how she was thinking of Roger and how she wished that he could have seen what she did with Wonder Woman.
Wow. Oh, in my belief system, he did. Now, I don't think I've ever asked you this.
Okay, now I have to ask you. In your belief system, he did. Because in my belief system, I think he knows, too.
So do I.
All right.
So do I.
Okay.
Now, I don't think I've ever asked you this, but once you guys got serious in the relationship, what was the first time you remember telling him he was dead wrong about a movie?
Well, very early on while we were still dating, because I didn't know, Gene Siskel told me, because I didn't know that Roger didn't like A Clockwork Orange. And that was Stanley Kubrick's. That was one of my favorite movies.
Classic.
And Gene and Roger and I were going to go on a date. And Gene, Gene had to, for some reason, come pick me up in the car, in the limo, because we're going to go somewhere to do something first. And
An event.
An event and or a media thing, whatever. Anyway. So when we're in the car, before Roger comes out, Gene says, did you know that Roger gave a Clockwork Orange thumbs down.
Oh, icebreaker.
Jean's just starting trouble. Jean is just starting trouble.
What? No, I didn't know that. Oh, yeah, you should ask him about it.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, no. And what did Roger backpedal?
He said, well, I wasn't going to tell you right away.
Oh, that's funny.
So, that Gene could, but he was funny.
It wasn't like a blind date where you're hiding a toupee or a couple of kids you didn't want to bring up right away.
But for movies, I mean, that's serious business.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. Did you learn movie appreciation from him at a different level than you had just as a fan?
Of course I did. But you have to realize that one of the reasons that he was probably attracted to me is because I knew a lot about movies when we met.
Yep.
And
well, that and you being a babe. Those two things. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't all about the movies. That's true.
We want to talk about this day for empathy, and we'll do that more right after the news. We're also standing by for the Reverend Jackson. We know how busy he is, and we're expecting to hear from him in the 9 o'clock hour as well. And Orion Samuelson will join us before 10 to talk about the thumping that the farmers of Iowa are going to take from this China tariff war going on with the Trump White House.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
All you got to do is hear the first couple of notes of that, right?
It makes me so happy whenever I hear that theme song. Brings back
nothing but memories, theme song. From the that's really the love theme from Gene and Roger for a lot of years. Chaz Ebert's here. A Day of Empathy established in Chicago as a tribute to your late husband. And why is this so important to you?
You know why it's important to me? Because first of all, this country is so divided now.
Amen.
Not just politically, but religion, by class, by race. It's so divided at a time when I thought that we were actually coming closer together. And Roger said that movies are a machine that generates empathy, that lets you know the aspirations and hopes and dreams of people of another race or color or of an immigrant, of different people.
Sure.
And I think it's time for us to talk about how we can bring people together again rather than how we divide people. It's so important to me.
What can we do? People listening to this, what's the one message that you want them to come away with today?
I want more than one message. One message is put yourself in someone else's shoes so that you can feel what it's like to be a person of somebody different than you. The other thing is I actually want, it's messaging right now. It's having water cooler conversations about what empathy means, how you can do something as simple as, this is going to sound very simple, but smiling at people rather than, staying in your head and thinking about all the things that are going on.
Well, staring at a screen. Staring at a screen while you're walking down the street, right? Get your head out of your phone for 10 seconds and realize what's going on in the world.
Yes. One of the things that we're going to do in Chicago, though, is also have a contest where we encourage schools to do projects so they can win prizes for a school illustrating empathy across any discipline. It could be, and they can use any of their courses to put together a project for empathy, and at the end there will be prizes. Right now it's only 10 prizes of $1,000 each.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, but we're hoping that there will be even more.
Well, because as you build this thing and as it goes on, there ought to be corporate folks who jump in because they want to be a part of it.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do they get a hold of you in particular or the organization?
They can reach us at rogerebert.com/empathy.
Okay, and I'm sure there's probably tags on a website, right? Right on the homepage and place, or just search it. Search empathy. It's right there.
Yes.
You should search empathy anyway.
Or hashtag day for empathy. Day number four, empathy.
There you go.
Absolutely. Roger had a quote, and I know we're going to talk about Ebertfest too in a little bit, but when you pop up your website, it says, every great film should seem new every time you see it. And that was one of Roger's famed quotes. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that with people, though, too. Every time you see someone and you said yourself, put yourself in their shoes. Maybe someone's having a bad day.
Absolutely.
You have to realize that.
Right. I think that one of the things that I loved about Roger is, even though I always thought it was ironic that he was a movie critic, because he was actually one of the most, he was so kind and so generous, and he had a really big heart, and he loved people so much. He was always doing things behind the scenes that you didn't hear about, and some of those things are on our website at RogerEbert.com. This week, because it's the fifth anniversary of his death, we are giving over each day something new on the site. So yesterday we had film critics write about the kindness that Roger showed, or how empathy had an effect and impacted them. Mm-hmm. Today I think we have, I forget whether it's everyday people or, but every day we're having something on the website about what empathy means and how it shows up.
Well, it goes to what you're talking about. I mean, the core of this is you can have separate beliefs. You can have your separate opinions. But we're all human beings on the same planet trying to get by. You know, hold a door for somebody.
Yes.
You know, don't gun it when somebody's crossing the street.
Okay.
Just basic decency.
Let somebody have that parking space.
Yes. Yeah, all those little things. And when somebody's really struggling, you know, it's not a bad thing to feel. You know, feel for them and understand that that sadness or pain you feel is real, and it's a good thing because it could drive change.
You know, Steve, what I want to do is reach a point where our Chicago public school students feel safe going to school,
amen,
coming home. I want them to know that someone loves them, that someone wants them to be safe, that someone wants to protect them, and I want them to start feeling, and I want them to know that it's not okay to bully each other,
right,
and that it's not okay to be bullied, no matter what they see on a national level,
amen,
from our president. I hate to say that, but
no, it's true. It's true. And I always encourage parents too, don't assume that your kid's the good kid because your kid's the good kid at home.
That's
check
right.
their behavior out and make sure they're not the part of the larger circle that's causing the problems
right.
as well.
You know, another reason and day for empathy is because our children here in Chicago may not always be able to afford to go to Washington to march,
sure,
like the kids from Parkland did. And so I wanted to make sure that we have something that we do right here starting in the city, because I love this city. This is my hometown, and I want to see it. I want to see us do better.
Well, you know what? You're doing a fine job of keeping Roger going left and right here, and the foundation is going great as well. I know this is part of the foundation, but what you're doing every day.
Yes, it's part of the Roger and Chaz Ebert Foundation, but also of RogerEbert.com.
What about the Film Fest, Andrea?
Oh, this is one of my favorites, Ebert Fest. It's the 20th anniversary. Steve, this started out, Roger and Chaz came down, and it was just it's at the Virginia Theater, which is
at the University
downtown.
Of
yeah, the downtown part of the campus. And there were maybe a couple hundred, right, Chaz? Now it's just people come from all over the world
all
to
over,
Ebert Fest.
Absolutely. And we're celebrating our 20th anniversary. We're having who I call the three queens of cinema. Ava DuVernay is bringing her film 13th.
Nice.
Julie Dash, this is the 25th year of her classic film, Daughters of the Dust, which Roger loved. And Amma Asante is coming in from England,
really,
with her movie Belle.
Wow,
yes.
Cool.
Yeah. And then, but we're also having, da-da, The Big Lebowski, and the real dude, Jeff
yes.
Dowd, is going to be there.
Is that
so,
right?
The dude abides.
Oh,
if you're a film
but
fan.
But hold on, is there a bowling alley in Springfield worthy of that?
You know what? We told all the bowling alleys to be on alert.
In Springfield, what am I talking about?
Yeah.
Champagne.
Yeah.
Champagne. We told all the bowling alleys to be on alert.
It's true.
Because the dude's coming.
That's right.
That's
and,
funny.
And there's Q&A sessions. This is just, you
yes.
watch the movies. There's, a dozen movies? Or there's
yeah, about yeah.
That you,
said, about
yeah,
a dozen.
That you can
over
watch.
Over 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, and it's Q&A, so you can mm-hmm. ask any question. Mm-hmm. And Chaz, like I said, just donates her time to talk to all the students, which
you know,
is so cool.
I love it. I love talking to the students, especially. But also, we have a group who comes, they call themselves the Rhodes Scholars, R-O-A-D scholars, because they are older and they love movies and they're very open-minded about movies, which is good because some of the movies that we show are not strictly family-friendly. So, you know, another movie we're showing, this is the 20th or 25th anniversary of the movie Selena, which made Jennifer Lopez a
yep.
star.
Right.
And we're having the director Gregory Nava come in for Selena as well.
You know, and these young filmmakers who are trying to get a leg up, every opportunity to spread the news of their work is a big deal.
Absolutely.
Mar, what about RogerEbert.com?
Well, RogerEbert.com, we have daily, last week, for instance, we had Women Writers Weeks. I turned the website completely over to all of our women writers, and all of the movie reviews last week were written by women critics. Articles every single day last week were written by women critics. I started this in 2013 because Roger and I used to have a debate about whether there was a difference in how women perceived movies and men perceived movies.
Right.
We agreed that in the majority of cases, the critical consensus is that we see them the same way. However, there is a great percentage of where there really is a difference, and that's why, you know, some men will dismiss a movie and call it a chick flick when it's something that could be very important, very entertaining, and you got to start seeing movies where that don't devalue women.
Be open-minded. Mm-hmm.
Yes, be open-minded, yeah.
Do I even have to be open-minded about The Shape of Water? Because that one's a tough for me. That one's a stretch for me.
Come on. It's a love story. It's a love story. You don't have to fall in love with
the
fish.
Love story made me want
to
poke my eyes out.
And that was by a man. I mean, Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
I love that movie. It's so romantic.
RogerEbert.com also has a Share Your Empathy the story or two on it, too. So easy clicks everywhere Roger Ebert's name is and Chaz Ebert's name is. You'll be able to work your way back to a day for empathy.
Hashtag day number four, empathy.
Yep. And to make it come full circle, too, EbertFest 2018, I know, Chaz, you wanted to get this out, too, is going to be dedicated to the memory of Mary Frances Fagan, one of our friends who recently passed away.
And you know, Mary Frances Fagan is having her memorial service at the Museum of Broadcast Communication April 14th. On the stage of Saturday Night Live.
Seems right. Doesn't that seem right?
Absolutely.
Seems completely right. And I also want to say hi to Kate, Gene Siskel's daughter. When Kate was a little girl, Gene would bring her into the radio station before I'd been fired from that one and come by. So that's how I got to know Gene. But it was always a pleasure to see Roger, and it's always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you. And I love Kate Siskel. Kate and her sister Callie were our flower girls at our wedding.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so I keep up with them. To this day, I love them.
Turns out they turned into pretty good grown-ups, huh?
They are wonderful.
Yeah,
very smart.
Nice to see you, Chaz Ebert.
Thank you.
Day for empathy. Day the number four, empathy. You can help in a lot of ways, but you can just help yourself by being a little more empathetic to folks.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, I got me a fine wife. I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle.
We missed the public opportunity to wish this kid a happy birthday. Happy birthday, youngster.
Well, thank you very much, Dad. Appreciate that.
Big O's birthday over the weekend, and the show got busy Friday, so we couldn't throw it out then. But I sent you an email, and I texted your wife, and I'm thinking, O doesn't text, does he? He doesn't have time for that nonsense.
She does, but just frequently. But my partner Max did something. I'm not on Facebook, but Max is. And he posted a picture taken about 2 years ago of me sitting on the restored farm all tractor that I grew up on as a kid.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
And I got hundreds of birthday greetings from across the country. So still been trying to respond to them. And yes, had a very good birthday. David and Carla, my son and daughter-in-law, and Catherine, my daughter, were all here. And we dined under the full moon of the desert in the outdoor patio at Lawns at Hermosa Inn.
Very nice. By the way, speaking of tractors, I'm looking at a story here about a 90-mile-an-hour beast, the world's fastest tractor, Chevy engine. It's been around since 1967, but thanks to the mechanics and the maniacs at Top Gear, they've cranked it up to all new levels. This is something that would make our friend Max Armstrong lose his mind. 90 miles an hour in a tractor.
Yeah, it makes no sense at all. You can't plow ground. You can't do anything with it, but they do that for the tractor pulling competition, which has gotten to be a major event. And I have been at tractor pulls where they've taken helicopter engines and put into the tractor. That may be what they did to get this one at 90 miles an hour.
I'm looking at the picture you mentioned that Max posted with the lovely, I guess they're dairy princesses, probably?
Yes, that was in my home county of Vernon County, Wisconsin, at a June Dairy Month breakfast.
And this is Sid Samuelson's tractor. Did he go by Sid or Sidney?
Sam.
Oh, Sam, okay.
Yep.
The old tractor, which, well, I'll tell you what, Farmall made them to last, didn't they?
They really did. That one was delivered to our farm in 1939, early in the morning, and I think my dad paid $700 cash for it because he had saved up money in order to do that.
A lot of money back then.
Pardon?
A lot of money back then, $700.
Oh, it was. And then we used the tractor until 1964 when Dad sold the farm, and it brought $790 at the auction.
Wow, nice turn. Huh? How about
nice
that for a profit?
Orion,
nice
I know,
investment.
We know you're not on Facebook, but you got this is pretty big. You got about 1,000 likes on this, which is big time, Orion.
Yeah, that may not mean a lot to you, O, but that's a nice hit on social media.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is.
Well, thank you. And thank you to all the people that took the time to do it. I won't have time, of course, to respond to all of those people. But I did hear from people I haven't heard from for a long, long time. And some old friends who are now working at the U.S. Department of Agriculture who I hadn't heard from. And so it was fun getting all the responses.
I got to talk to you about something very serious here. And that's the beating the pork farmers of Iowa are on the verge of taking with this trade war that frankly didn't have to get cranked up, but it has been cranked up. And what do we know?
Well, this is what we know. As a matter of fact, one analyst that I really follow says that the pork glut in China has cut pork prices in that country, and they're at four-year lows, and the Chinese not expected to import much corn, if any, in the weeks ahead before the tariff announcement. And he said, my point is the imposed tariff will not really lower or impact total U.S. pork exports this year. Futures went limit down yesterday, most likely in the direct response to President Trump. So
the basic news then isn't as bad as we've heard, but it's still a bad year then, and it's outcome.
Yeah, it is a bad year anytime you mess with trade rules that impact the trade between countries. But you know, the other thing you have to do is look at the tremendous trade imbalance we have with China.
Oh, that needs to be fixed. There's no question.
Yeah, it really does. And I wonder if they can last longer than we can. I have a feeling they need us more than we need them. Not that we don't need them. They buy more of our soybeans than any country in the world. They're buying more of our ethanol than any country in the world. You know, back in the 70s, ethanol wasn't even a product.
Right.
And we had the big battle over food versus fuel in the tank. Well, ethanol has grown into such an industry in this country that we're exporting it to other countries. And China is a big buyer because they have said by the year 2020, we're going to clean up our air, which, of course, is horrible at the moment. It was back in the 70s when I went to China for the first time. I mean, you could hardly see the tops of skyscrapers because of smog. But they say we're going to clean it up by 2020, and that will take a lot of biofuel from Brazil and from the United States. So I'm not laying out my judgment yet on the trade situation, but trade wars are never good. Nobody wins.
And if you had a chance to tell, I know you speak with Sonny Perdue, the ag secretary, if you had a chance to let him know what a big deal you think the end of NAFTA would be on behalf of the farmers?
He knows that. He really does. He, as a matter of fact, today is starting a three-day RV tour, his tour getting back to our roots. This is the third one he's done since he was appointed a year ago. And he goes three, 4 days in an RV, stopping at universities, dealing with agriculture, stopping to visit with farm organization leaders and agribusiness people. And today he starts a tour that'll take him him to Michigan, Ohio, and Kentucky. He knows. He knows. And okay. I think he's doing a good job letting the president know. And I've asked him once in one of our conversations, I said, do you have an audience at the White House? And he said, yeah, not always the best, but I have an audience. So.
Well, that's all you want. You want to be heard.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you want to have an opportunity
so far,
to speak your piece.
I think he is being heard, probably not producing the results that farmers and ranchers would like, but give it a little time.
Well, happy birthday.
Well, thank you very much. 84 years on the planet, and I plan to keep on keeping on. And I hope to be back in the Midwest in time for the Walk of Fame.
Well, God, well, that's fabulous. That's tremendous. So, and
yeah, things are getting
84,
better.
I figure he's about halfway there. Yeah,
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think
you're
about halfway there.
As long as Gloria sticks around with me.
Oh, she's not going anywhere. She's not going anywhere. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
There you go. That's Orion Samuelson. We were at his 80th.
Yeah, we were. We had a great time at that party.
Wisecracking kid he turned out to be.
We should say parties, because he had a party at his house.
He has a great birthday party every year.
Fantastic, with a margarita fountain. And then we continued it at Tutti Santi.
I saw...
Well, once we found the restaurant.
I believe it was his 70th. I was in Arizona for his party, and he was presented... His friends presented him with a walking stick made from a petrified bull... appendage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you have that where?
You know, it's gone missing, but I think I know where it is. Okay. It was in my office forever.
You think someone took it?
I think that bull ought to get work in the movies.
Mm-hmm. Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
9:43. Let's listen to the blues. Gray, and it's rainy in downtown Chicago. Spring should have been here a week and a half ago, maybe two. And it's a melancholy thing in Memphis, isn't it? The anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. Again, one of the most amazing speeches ever given, and that's quite a collection when you talk about Martin Luther King, was his final speech to a group of striking Memphis garbage workers the night before he died. It's known as the Mountaintop Speech. Here's a segment of that on 720 WGN.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges, because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. And so just as I say we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around, we aren't going to let any injunction turn us around. What will happen now? We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
And less than 24 hours later, he was dead. Unbelievable. Dr. Martin Luther King, Domati Pongo, will continue covering the MLK 50 events in Memphis. Hear it all day here on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I want to remind you of a couple of things. On Thursday, we will be live at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Carmen, are you doing the post game, the pre game? Are you in the game? Are you playing for the White Sox? What is the story?
I've actually been working with Brooks Boyer over at about opening day because I don't have a pre or post game role. Andy Mazur is doing pre game. Adam Hogue will do post on
Thursday.
But
you will be there for the opener.
Yes, and I'm also might be doing the southpaw role.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Are you left handed?
I will be on Thursday if I can. Just like for the fourth or fifth inning type of thing.
Cool.
So if you stay for the game, Steve, it's supposed to be a little chilly, but I know you're tough and you're going to... I figured you'd get the elotes, have some corn, right?
Can you deliver...
The elotes.
Can you deliver Coach Daryl Boston and his whistle to us for an exclusive interview?
I don't know. I can't promise, but I can promise you I'll try.
Mm-hmm. Again, this is the White Sox first base coach, yes?
Yes, he has a whistle, if people miss this story, and which he uses to occasionally direct the outfielders or just kind of motivate the troops, fire things up, and Josh Donaldson of the Blue Jays doesn't like his whistle. So when he hit a home run last night that made it a tie game, he crossed home plate and then proceeded to whistle at Daryl Boston, who accepted responsibility for that home run after the game.
It's just weird. For some reason, it feels like that should have been disallowed forever ago.
Yeah.
Like, what's next? Like a third base coach with a vuvuzela?
Blow horns? Yeah, right. When is it allowed to whistle?
Because you know what was really, really annoying? Was the buzzer in San Antonio, which sounded like a car horn.
That was bizarre.
It just drove me nuts. It sounded like a car or an SUV, maybe a bus horn, mm-hmm. and it buzzed guys into the game, and it was also the 30-second shot, or 45 seconds in college?
30-second
shot clock.
Yeah, mm-hmm. used to be 45 when they first started.
Yeah, 30-second shot clock as well. And you'd hear, "Nyack!"
Well, maybe Daryl could work with the Blackhawks now that the White Sox and Blackhawks are all partnered up in radio, right? We get the goal horn going on here, and he could just have that.
Right.
That would really get things moving.
Well, it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
We could go with the Ooga horn. That might not be a bad call as well.
I got an Uber pool scheduled for 10:02, Steve. I'm going to have to cut out.
Well, that brings up a point. You do cut out every day right at 10. Well, what's your other job?
I work for Fansided.com.
And how's business at Fansided.com?
Business is good. Business is good. We're getting ready for the NFL draft in a way that I've never seen anybody get ready for the NFL draft. This is going to be a thing.
And is this going to be a good draft for the Bears?
That's a good question.
Define good.
That's why I asked it.
Minka Fitzpatrick's an interesting name out of Alabama, cornerback who could potentially step in. Quentin Nelson, guard, Notre Dame. The Bears would love to see him fall to number 8, but that's probably not going to happen.
Can I throw a name out?
Sure.
Jeff George Jr.
Jeff George Jr., not going to happen either.
Oh.
But good name.
Trying.
Yeah. Tomorrow on the show, as time allows, I'm not going to be here tomorrow.
What?
I'm off too, by the way.
Oh, you're off tomorrow as well?
I think Ennett's off as well.
Friday on the show.
Wait, what's going on? Everybody's leaving?
Yeah, no, I got a thing.
I have a thing.
Yeah, I got a thing. So I got a thing. But I'll be back on No, it's a separate thing. I'll be back on Thursday for the White Sox show at Guaranteed Rate Field. So we didn't have time to do this story. But your friend George Papadopoulos?
Yes.
The former Trump campaign advisor?
Yes.
Stuck in the middle of a Mueller probe?
Yes.
Apparently got a little, you remember,
he's not my friend, but go ahead.
Well, he's Greek, you know.
Yes, uh-huh.
He got a little talky at a bar in London.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how this whole Mueller probe and he being arrested and making a plea deal, that's how it all cranked out. Apparently he didn't learn a lot, because over the weekend Papadopoulos throwing back some vodka at Hydrate.
Oh boy.
You guys been to the club?
No.
Hydrate?
No, not.
He allegedly told Jason Wilson, a Chicago-area computer programmer who happened to recognize him, that Attorney General Sessions knew about his Russia connections and encouraged Papadopoulos before the election to, quote, find out anything he could about the hacked Clinton emails. Now, this is a good story, and we don't know that it's true or not true. Mm-hmm. Seems very specific not to be true.
Right.
But I also think Jason Wilson, in an effort just to, you know, maybe do the right thing or just tell a cool story.
Yes.
He may now have put himself in the middle of the Mueller investigation, and he may now be subpoenaed to go to Washington and testify.
Right. Loose lips sink ships.
Loose lips sink Greek ships.
That's right.
Loose lips sink a Papadopoulos.
Maybe that's a made-up name. Maybe he's not really Greek. We're not going to claim him.
I think that he's Greek. I do.
A little bit.
Yeah, the Papadopoulos. All right, Bill and Wendy are coming up. Do we know if they're going to show up at 10 o'clock as we continue to balance the show here? Okay, they're due to arrive in the studio any second now. Mark Carmen, thank you for the service.
Steve, great to be here as always. I will not be in tomorrow as well, but I'll be
No one will be here.
Okay, so
we'll all be together on Thursday.
Right, but tomorrow on the program, Pete will be here. I mean, I'm sorry, Justin will be here.
Yes.
Bill and Wendy are here. What's coming up on your show?
A whole bunch of rain.
Whoops,
stuff.
Hold on.
Hold on.
Whole bunch of rainy stuff today.
Oh, rainy stuff.
Yes, we're going to take naps. Bill brought his little nap mat.
Okay.
I'm going to look under his skirt.
Enjoy Justin tomorrow, and I'll see you Thursday from Guaranteed Rate Field.